A new report shows the cost of wildfire fighting has more than doubled since 1998. That's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition. I'm Conrad Scheid.
And I'm Christopher Allen. A little girl learns a difficult lesson about feeding wildlife, but she'll be okay. And if you have plans to be in western Montana's high country this weekend, you'd be smart to bring some warm clothes.
The Obama administration is detailing the toll that the escalating cost of fighting forest fires has had on other projects as it pushes Congress to overhaul how it pays for the most severe blazes. In a new report issued today, the Agriculture Department said that staffing for fighting fires has more than doubled since 1998. Meanwhile, the number of workers who manage National Forest System lands has dropped by about a third. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack said that accommodating the rapid rise in firefighting costs has harmed an array of conservation efforts. For example, spending that helps restore vegetation and watersheds after a fire has fallen 22% since 2001. The administration wants to use an already existing disaster relief fund to cover the expense of the most severe fires.
In other news from around Montana, the 7-year-old girl who was injured this weekend at Wild Horse Island State Park was hand-feeding fruit to one of the wild horses. Fish, Wildlife, and Parks Region 1 State Parks manager Dave Landstrom says she was treated at Polson's St. Joseph Medical Center and has been released.
She was on a visit to Wild Horse Island and was feeding the wild horses some fruit that was laying on the ground, and unfortunately, she got kicked in the back by one of them and ended up with some nice bruising and some scrapes and cuts.
The investigation continues. Langstrom reminds visitors that all of the animals on Wild Horse Island are wild and people should not approach them. Feeding animals is prohibited in the park.
All of the animals on Wild Horse Island State Park are indeed wild, and sometimes they look docile or they might appear tame, but they're not. And so give them a little room. Give them 100 feet. You can still get great photographs and have a good visit there, but everybody stays safe that way. Any wild animal, as you know, can be unpredictable, and it's just a good idea to give them a little buffer.
Sometimes the horses will approach visitors.
Yeah, if they do that, they're probably hoping to be fed, and we would just ask that you make yourself uninviting. If you wave your arms, shout at them a little bit, wave your backpack around, they'll get the message that you're not there to feed them. And, most of the time they ignore you anyway, and that'll let them know you're not there to feed them.
Montana State Parks asked visitors to report anyone observed feeding the horses or other animals on the island as soon as possible to 1-800-TIP-MONT.
A man who was injured when another man jumped off a Clark Fork River bridge and landed on him is suing Missoula County, alleging it did not take enough steps to prevent such an accident. The Missoulian Report's Andy Hill's lawsuit argues the Bandman Bridge in East Missoula has no barriers to prevent jumping and no signs to warn those on the river of the potential danger. Hill suffered torn knee ligaments, a broken leg, and other injuries in July of 2013 when Corey Allen Hewitt landed on Hill as he floated the river on an inner tube. Hewitt was given a 2-year deferred sentence for negligent endangerment and was ordered to pay Hill over $22,000 in restitution. County Chief Administrator Officer Vicki Zier says the county intends to resolve the matter amicably.
As was reported earlier this week, the health insurance plan for state workers and retirees, not university system employees, is losing $14 million this year, meaning probable hikes in premiums, co-pays, and deductibles next year. Montana Department of Administration Director Sheila Hogan tells Edward O'Brien this could likely result in across-the-board 15% rate increases.
Retirees are a little bit different. There isn't a state contribution toward retirees, but they're in the plan. And currently we subsidize retirees at about 40%. So for every dollar they pay, the state pays out 40% or 40 cents on a dollar.
Who's affected most by this? And by that, I mean single people, couples?
Well, it really is across the board. Everyone will be somewhat affected. We have not decided. The state share is a mandatory subject of collective bargaining, so we don't know what that will be yet. And generally, the state share covers the single person's premium, so we're not quite sure how that will all shake out.
What's led to this?
Well, we're a self-insured plan, like I said, so there are some financial drivers, a number of financial drivers. They are large claims. As I mentioned, we're self-insured, so we have a third-party administrator. Previously, it was Blue Cross Blue Shield, but now we have Cigna. So during that conversion, there was a claim lag time. So there was actually more claims in the pipeline than we knew about. Consequently, we sort of underestimated that, and we've had lots of large claims. We do, as you're aware, we have the health clinics. So previously per year, we had about 4,400 people screened, which is blood, cholesterol, those types of things. But during the last year, we had 12,000 people screened. People are engaging in their health care, and that's good. But overall, people are finding some catastrophic health issues. So we had an increase in chronic diseases such as cancer, heart, some of those kind of things. But we believe we're catching them early, but that's one of the reasons we're seeing some of these issues.
And when you talk about those health clinics, that's referring to the clinics for state employees,
right,
that Governor
right.
Schweitzer.
Yes.
Yes. Could the availability of these screenings, of these services now, could that be altered, or will it just continue as is?
Well, I don't know that we want to alter health screenings, because it's a way to identify diseases early on, and we can treat those diseases early, and we would be able to contain costs.
This was not exactly a huge surprise.
It wasn't a surprise. We anticipated dipping into the reserves this year.
Somebody representing the State Department met with the Employee Advisory Council earlier this week, correct?
Yes. Karen Wood is the acting administrator, and both she and I were at that meeting.
What is the Employee Advisory Council?
It's a council that is representative of state employees. There are union members. There are the legislative branch. Their HR person sits on the group. There's a retiree that sits on the group representing retirees. And it's to run changes through them and to get their opinion. And their advisory, but we certainly listen to their input.
And what came of that meeting?
Oh, they really feel that there's a lot of changes, and they're not happy about paying more money.
Well, who is ever?
Exactly, who is.
What now?
We are looking at managing those chronic diseases. We're looking at using the primary care availability in the clinic, and we're looking at more education to our employees.
More education meaning what?
More education on how to control their individual health issues, diet, exercise, all of those types of things. And that's not going to necessarily impact the plan next year, but those are those lifetime changes that will affect the health of our employees in the long term.
Regarding the state health plan itself and these increases, is there anything that could possibly be done to prevent this, or is this essentially a done deal?
Oh, it's a done... I mean, we... Really, when you look at the actuaries, we're looking in the rearview mirror. So when we talk about claim lag, this was a bad year, but really with the claim lag, it was a bad 2 years. And sometimes you have those blips, and we're hoping it's a blip, but we are really working hard to control those costs in the future.
Could it be another year or two, perhaps, before...
It could, but I am really optimistic that we have this under control.
Why do you say that?
Because we're looking at increase in state share, we're looking at controlling costs. There's a lot of partners that are coming to the table that we're really purchasing in volume, and hopefully we can look at discounts, those types of things. We're really looking at a comprehensive strategy.
And in the meantime, how do people prepare for these rate increases? And I guess I'll answer my question, and that is rework your budget a little bit.
Well, rework your budget, and there's no cost to employees who come through the health center. We're self-insured, and we're all in this together in the state plan, so I just think we have to look at it in that way.
Sheila Hogan, Director of the Department of Administration in Montana, thank you so much for your time.
All right, thank you.
An unseasonably cool weather front is moving into western Montana this week, with temperatures expected to drop into the 30s in some areas. National Weather Service hydrologist Ray Nicholas says a cold low-pressure system is already coming down from the north.
We're getting a a real cold, low-pressure system coming in from the north, and it's going to drop temperatures 10 to 20 degrees below what the average would be this time of year. You know, Glacier Park's going to see snow. You know, if you're out in the mountains, you know, doing like a backpacking trip or whatever, it's going to be cold, wet, kind of miserable. And then even in the valleys, it's going to be pretty darn cold too, you know.
Nicholas says it's possible western Montana could see August records for low temperatures and precipitation. As a result, fire officials have lifted Stage 1 fire restrictions for west central Montana starting on Saturday. Fire restriction coordinator Chris Johnson says fire dangers remain high, and though fire activity will be much lower for the next few weeks, bans on debris burning are still in effect.
The burn bans will likely hold probably until what we refer to as a season-ending event in mid-September, when we're in a long-term, cool, moist phase, when the days are short and the humidity recovers at night. That's probably when counties will look to lift those burn bans. You know, if we get into a warming trend, a sunny trend for a week or 2 weeks to end August, we could be back into very high fire danger and bringing crews back into the area to help us fight fires.
Johnson says human-caused fires dropped once officials instituted State 1 restrictions on August 7th.
We really want to thank those folks in the area who took those Stage 1 restrictions to heart and did what they were supposed to do and limit the risk to firefighters all across the state.
We'll have more weather information coming up later in the broadcast.
A report of an explosive device yesterday afternoon drew Missoula emergency response teams to a home near Playfair Park. Police Detective Sergeant Jim Clawiter says the incident at 919 Spartan Drive started around 3 p.m.
Officers arrived and saw what they thought could be a pipe bomb, called for the bomb disposal team, which is this truck right here. And we obtained a search warrant, and they used the robot to move a suspected pipe bomb and destroy it.
Nobody was injured in the process of destroying the device. Police then conducted a search of the house, but turned up no sign of any other suspected explosives. The Missoulian reports three unidentified people were arrested at the scene.
The trustee representing Montana's Yellowstone Club creditors is offering a reward to anyone who can help recover assets the luxury resort's co-founder might have hidden from bankruptcy proceedings. Attorney Brian Glasser with West Virginia-based Bailey & Glasser LLP says the trust will give 10% of the profits of the liquidated assets recovered from Tim Blixeth to anyone with information that helps lead to their recovery. He's calling on people with knowledge of the former billionaire's transactions to come forward in what the trust is calling a reward program. Blixeth dismissed the program as a sign of desperation ahead of an appellate court ruling on the resort's bankruptcy and other appeals that Blixeth says could eliminate the trust's claims. A bankruptcy judge previously said Blixeth diverted hundreds of millions of dollars from a 2005 loan to the resort for his personal use.
A former Livingston and Billings West High teacher and basketball coach faces federal charges alleging he sexually exploited children and distributed child pornography. The Billings Gazette reports a 42-year-old Scott James Nichols pleaded not guilty to a 23-count indictment during a hearing Tuesday before U.S. Magistrate Judge Carolyn Ostby. The indictment charges Nichols with two counts of sexual exploitation of children, two counts of attempted sexual exploitation, 16 counts of distribution of child pornography, and three counts of possessing child pornography. The crimes are alleged to have happened in Yellowstone County between December 2012 and May 2013. Nichols was placed on paid administrative leave in May 2013 after school officials learned about the federal investigation. His contract wasn't renewed. Nichols' attorney, Jay Lansing, declined to comment.
Cool temperatures and rainy skies are in the forecast this evening for most of Montana. There's a chance of thunderstorms as well, with rain showers throughout the night. Lows in southwest Montana and west of the Divide from the mid-40s to lower 50s. Lows in the 50s for central Montana. Tomorrow should be more of the same, with thunderstorms later in the day. Highs in the 60s. And now for the editorial comments of Zach Porter.
Last summer, at about this time, my wife and I groggily unzipped our warm sleeping bags and climbed out of our yellow tent. Bracing ourselves against the morning chill, we gazed out on the windswept tundra of the Continental Divide at the headwaters of the Yellowstone River. It was day 4 of an 8-day trek to the point farthest from a road in the lower 48. Our goal seemed simple enough that morning: traverse the upper reaches of the Yellowstone and walk to the summit of Yount's Peak, which stands guard over this remote corner of the Teton Wilderness area. With an early start under clear skies, the stars seemed to be aligned for us to reach our destination. As we crossed a snowfield at the base of Yount's Peak, movement caught our eyes several hundred yards uphill. A large, dark shape scampered across the snow, too close for comfort. "That's no marmot. Is it a wolverine?" we whispered to one another. But then that dark shape was joined by another, and another, and another. In a space of time that felt like an eternity, but could not have been more than 30 seconds, no fewer than 7 grizzly bears emerged from the rocks and snow patches. Our hair stood on end. Our hearts raced. The bears, looking more like alpine acrobats than the lumbering huckleberry pickers we often think of them as, scaled 45-degree snow-covered chutes and treacherous rock faces, climbing the final 1,000 feet to the summit of Yount's Peak in a matter of moments to flee the human intruders. Us. In stunned silence, we backed down the slope and away from the mountain. Our awe was an adrenaline-infused combination of fear and sheer joy, a sense of isolation and intimate connection. We felt both smaller and larger than we had ever felt before. There was no way we were going to summit Yount's Peak that day, after all. The beautiful thing about our nation's wilderness areas, managed under the thoughtful guidance of the 1964 Wilderness Act, which celebrates its 50th birthday on September 3rd, is the diversity of reasons we all come to love them. Experiences like running into a grizzly bear rendezvous are just one of many that draw us back into our wild public lands again and again. Whether you're out for an afternoon picnic, hunting for the elk that will fill your family's freezer, or casting a fly on a still mountain lake, wilderness areas are lands of many uses. They're an enduring resource of freedom and pride, one of the reasons I'm most grateful to be an American. Freedom has been on my mind a lot lately. This summer, I've been privileged to take groups of combat veterans of the wars in Afghanistan, Iraq, and Vietnam into Montana's unparalleled wild country, where it's easy to experience the hush of the land, as it's so poetically described by legendary local outfitter Smoke Elser. Sitting around the campfire at night in the Bob Marshall Wilderness, stories of war and camaraderie fed the warm embers and fought off the evening chill. Transfixed by the glowing coals, laughter and banter all around me, I realized that while I've never been to war and will never know what these young men experienced overseas, and while we may not share every political or social conviction, we have a deep common love of the wild. It's a love that most Montanans share, a passion we express each fall when we take to the hills and each spring when we take to the rivers. Wilderness, or more accurately, our craving for it, is as deep an American value as there is. The richness of our public lands is the envy of the world, and we are programmed, as Americans, to return to it year after year to renew a bond with our country and ourselves. This September 3rd marks 50 years since President Lyndon Johnson signed the Wilderness Act into law. 8 years and 66 drafts in the making, the Wilderness Act passed with just one dissenting vote in the House of Representatives. It's difficult to imagine Congress acting with such unified purpose today, but here in Montana, we know that access to our favorite places to hunt, fish, hike, and ride horses is a near universal value, and one that you don't need to be a millionaire to enjoy. As we celebrate wilderness's golden anniversary, we have a chance to take stock of the progress we've made since 1964 and the challenges that lie ahead. 1983 marks the last time a new wilderness was designated by Congress in Montana. Will that 31-year drought be broken with the passage of Senator John Tester's Forest Jobs and Recreation Act, or Senator Max Baucus's, now Senator John Walsh's, Rocky Mountain Front Heritage Act? How will we manage our wilderness areas in the face of a changing climate? And how will we pass our public land heritage on to the next generation of Montanans, ensuring that the next 50 years of wilderness will be as successful as the last? This September 10th, 11th, and 12th, the Mansfield Center on Ethics and Policy, the Project on American Democracy and Citizenship, and the Montana Wilderness Association invite you to help answer these critical questions at the Fall 2014 Mansfield Conference titled The Storied Past, The Troubled Future, The Imperative of Wilderness at 50 Years. Bringing together nationally recognized political leaders, historians, philosophers, wilderness managers, and advocates, the free 3-day event will explore the legal and ethical imperative to preserve wilderness as a public good. Speakers including Montana Congressman Pat Williams, world-renowned historians Donald Worster and Doug Scott, and local celebrity author David James Duncan are just a few of the many and varied voices who will challenge us to envision the next 50 years of wilderness in the U.S. The conference will pay special attention to the key role of Montana in the past and future of wilderness. Find out more by visiting the Mansfield Center's website. And finally, please add the following celebration to your calendar. The Montana Wilderness Association is hosting Wild 50th Fest in Sealy Lake, featuring a free concert by the Mission Mountain Wood Band on the evening of Saturday, September 6th. Or join us for a whole weekend of music, hikes, and kids' activities beginning on Friday the 5th. Find out more at wildmontana.org. This is Zach Porter of the Montana Wilderness Association, guest commentator for the Mansfield Center for Ethics and Policy at the University of Montana.
Zach Porter is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed don't necessarily represent those of this station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Christopher Allen.
And I'm Conrad Scheid. Thanks for listening, and please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.